And we're back. For the next half hour, we're going to be speaking with Nina Quintana. She is the New Mexico State Manager for Save the Children Action Network and was one of the advocates helping to push legislation through this year, making New Mexico the first state in the nation to provide universal child care to all of its residents. Nina, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about the bill, what it will do, how it will work. And as we were talking about this a little bit earlier in the show, I mentioned it is one thing to promise that, and it will be another thing for the state to actually deliver it. So can you talk about some of the specifics that are in the legislation?
Yeah, absolutely. So this bill basically just codifies rules and regulations that the Early Childhood Education and Care Department already had in place. So this just solidifies the Child Care Assistance Program that many families in New Mexico had already been taking advantage of. Basically, it just states that with the revenues that the state has in its various funds that we have set up, that we will be able to afford to give every single working family the ability to get free child care. There are some triggers in place just in case the revenues start to fall a little bit, and we will have some co-pays that go into effect for the families who earn 600% or more above the federal poverty line. But we don't anticipate those going into effect for quite a while. So we are looking forward to having so many children in care in New Mexico.
So what is the process a family would go through if they come here, especially since if it's universal, then all residents would qualify, all families. What would a family have to do to see that their children are in this, that they get the support they need for child care?
Right. So it's actually a pretty easy process. I myself have a daughter in care. She's 2 years old. And it was surprisingly easy. Look to see what providers there are. And the ECCD does have a great list of providers that accept these subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
So then you would then go to the child care portal and find the place that you would like to send your child. And then it's a really easy application that you fill out. And from my understanding, they're going to be making it even easier than it was previously. So it's just filling out your information about you and your spouse or your partner, and then the information about your child, mm-hmm. and then you're all set to go.
And are there certain facilities, do they have to be licensed, these child care facilities, or is it it would presumably be, I don't know, maybe neighborhood. There's a nice woman down the street who takes kids in, but is there like a protocol for which child care facilities would qualify to take the subsidies?
Any registered or licensed child care facility
okay.
can take the subsidies. So they don't have to be licensed. But they do have to be registered, which
yes.
the department has made much, much easier through
oh, good.
All of this.
And then they're the ones that would be getting the subsidy directly for the child.
Yes, and they have raised the reimbursement rate as well. So the centers are getting an increased amount of money for each child that
oh,
comes
good.
Into their
care. So that, I think, is the issue, is that, will there be enough private child care centers to meet the demand? And I also believe that there was a part of the legislation dealing with pay for child care workers who notoriously have been underpaid. And can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. So New Mexico definitely is in the category of what we call a child care desert. So there aren't enough spots for every single child that we do have within our state. However, the department is hoping that with specific incentives that they have been offering, and obviously all of this new excitement and all of this increased funding, that we will be able to increase the amount of centers that we have so that more children will be able to be accepted into those programs. Obviously, we do need the people to be able to care for those children first and foremost. We can have a building, but if it doesn't have the people in it to care for the children,
mm-hmm.
Obviously that's a no-starter. So the department has increased entry-level wages for early childhood providers, which is a great start. They do have funding to create what is called the wage and career ladder for early childhood professionals across the state. And we're hoping that they can implement that in a timely manner so that we can start to see an increase in people joining the field, not just joining the field, but also remaining in the field and making this a career rather than a job. So we do have that continuity of care for children, which is so important.
Are you working at all with NMSU or other universities that might have programs in child care?
Yeah, they work with many different organizations throughout the state. So it's New Mexico is such a wonderful place to have child care because we have what's called a mixed delivery system. So we have the, you know, the person down the street that might be caring for children in the neighborhood, but we also do have these bigger centers within universities. We have the private centers. We have public centers. And really, it's a great system because parents get to choose what is best for their child, and the centers get to offer the care that they feel comfortable giving.
Nancy asked what I thought was a pretty good question, which was if, you know, say it's a grandmother or not a relative, but somebody down the street who is looking after kids, is there anything in the system that would help that those people, or are they still kind of out on their own?
No, so the department has made it a lot easier for those individuals to register as care providers. And there was another bill that was passed during the legislative session that is helping to remove some of the red tape around the zoning regulations that some people might be facing when it comes to starting up a small business.
I had a little bit, I supported the bill, but I did have a little bit of reservation just about the notion that, you know, if somebody's 600% of the poverty line, that's, you're making pretty good money. And do those people really need help? I came down on the idea that if you're going to provide it universally, then that just makes, it makes it something that, that becomes more automatically accepted. So I did end up supporting it, but I did have reservations about the idea that, you know, Harvey Yates doesn't need me to help him get his child taken care of. What is the answer to that one?
So, you know, that's a fair criticism, and I think a lot of people were concerned about that at the beginning. I think what this this policy has ended up doing, though, is that it has removed some of the stigma around receiving government help for child care that maybe lower-income families had been afraid to reach out to but what it also does is it promotes the idea that child care is not only a public good, which it is. You know, we need people to be able to go to work and not be hampered by caring for their little ones. But we also want to recognize that early childhood education is such a it's such a formative time in an individual's life. And, you know, the brain is developing at such a rapid rate from the ages of birth to five. And we want to really make the most of that and send those kids into an environment where they're going to be nurtured and cared for, and all of those synapses can start to take place, and they're going to, you know, blossom into their best selves.
And they're going to get, they're going to be around other children, which will be really important.
Sure.
Oh, it's so huge. That peer modeling is such an important thing. I used to be an early childhood educator myself. And so I worked in the field for just about a decade. And, you know, I see that all the time. Those kids who maybe hadn't been in school for a long time, maybe were joining in a little bit later, but they start to blossom under the that modeling that their peers have, those friendships, those bonds, that, that recognition that other people are going through the exact same thing that they're going through themselves. And that learning can be such an exciting journey.
You mentioned earlier that, that there are areas of the state where we're really lacking. Obviously, this will be a tremendous boost. But do you have any sense at all in terms of, you know, how much time it is going to take to build up that capacity and to reach, you know, the areas of the state that – it doesn't matter what the issue is, it seems like they're always the same areas that go underserved.
You know, I think mostly the biggest thing that we can do in terms of getting those underserved populations the care that they need is by investing in the workforce, because those are the people that they're going to make that happen, right? So if you do have a person that maybe was interested in doing this, and then they see that they'll be making a decent amount of money, they have a career pathway rather than just this job that may be kind of a dead end, that might incentivize them to go into the field, stay in the field, encourage others to join the field. It might even encourage people to come back to the field who had previously left due to the fact that they had been underpaid for so long.
Mm-hmm. So this is like a really small business loan almost. They can see, all right, there is an income stream here that could be steady if I turn part of my house into a daycare center.
Exactly. I think just also talking more and more about early childhood education, just having these conversations and talking about the importance of sending children into these amazing places and giving them the care that they so deeply deserve, I think that that is going to be a huge help in increasing places for children to go as well.
You talked earlier about the stigma. I think you're absolutely right. I heard that so much during the time when I was up covering the legislature, and the argument, well, it should be the parents. The parents should be as – and I guess my response to that is always it doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be both. I mean, most parents could use a little bit of help. And I just think you look at our nation – looks at it differently, child care does, than the rest of the world, where it's just understood that, of course, you need to provide those services. So I don't know if there's a question in there as much as a statement, but what are your thoughts about just kind of changing that attitude that people have towards child care?
No, I think that that's a great point to make. I think that that's something that New Mexico is definitely trying to lead the way in, is changing that narrative around what early childhood education is and what it can become. You know, I think that that's an important conversation that is an ongoing process. You know, education is a science, so it's constantly evolving. And I think that we need to continue to look at what purpose it serves for the children that are receiving that education. So for right now, yes, it's a public good, because parents do need to work. And especially when times are tough and the economy is not doing its best, we need to make sure that families feel provided for, that they are able to have that breathing room to be able to go to work and earn the money that they need to support their families. We also know that early childhood education is education, but we don't want to lump it in with K-12 too much, because we don't want to be testing our little ones too much either. And that can be a huge burden on the educators as well. But we also understand that early childhood education is also just really good for children.
Yes.
So whether you need it or not, whether you have to have it because of work or not, sending your child into those care areas, into those classrooms, is so beneficial for them, because children need to be around other children. They need to be exposed to different environments. They need to be exposed to different ways of learning. And early education is absolutely the best way to start that lifelong love of learning and that journey on their education pathway.
Is there any requirement that people who are registered as child care providers have a basic understanding of early childhood education, like any not just formal courses, but that they've that they have some understanding of how to have an environment that is conducive for the children, little ones, to learn in a fun way?
Yeah, so, you know, each center is going to be different with the requirements as to what specifically they're looking for in their educators and their experience and education levels.
Uh-huh.
But there is a course that most educators are required to take to care for children in the state, and there are obviously other requirements as well, such as first aid and CPR, But yes, just an understanding of basic human development birth to age is definitely a requirement.
Right.
And then I know that the department is also trying to incentivize people to go back to work. And I think that wage and career ladder that I had mentioned earlier is also a great way to incentivize the workforce to get those higher credentials, to stay within the workforce and learn as much as they possibly can about how best to serve children.
Ah, yes.
Once again, we've been talking with Nina Quintana. She is the New Mexico State Manager for Save the Children Action Network, which was involved in helping to get legislation passed this year to provide universal child care in Las Cruces. And, well, not in Las Cruces, in New Mexico. I was anticipating my question, which was about Las Cruces and southern New Mexico. Do you have a sense of how far away we are from actually being able to provide services to every child? Say everybody tomorrow decided that they wanted to sign up. How far away would we be from being able to serve everybody?
We're definitely a few years down the road from it, just because of, again, that lack of space that we have for children. But I do know that the department is receiving now, I think, 10% of the entire state's budget, which is an incredible investment that no other state can match. And so with that investment, we're hoping that we can, again, incentivize the workforce, people to join, people to come back to the fold of early childhood education, and then, of course, people to be able to open up new centers or expand centers that they already have to be able to care for more children.
Mm-hmm. And part of that is public education, just to notify, you know, the community as a whole, not only that this is a resource, but that's going to be coming to you working parents, but also, hey, you might want to think if you're in had been in early childhood education and you loved it, this is a way to return.
Absolutely. I certainly hope that we're able to draw some people back. You know, I know so many people personally who have left the workforce to join maybe the public education department or even going into something like retail just because they needed to be able to make a little bit more money than they had been
sure.
as an early childhood educator. So hopefully with the department investing in this wage and career ladder to ensure that, you know, it reaches all of the professionals across the state, people will decide to come back to the field because this is a field that requires a great deal of passion, and it certainly doesn't just disappear overnight.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's for sure. Do you have a sense for well, let me ask you, I guess, the bigger question. 10% of the budget, is that what you said?
Yes.
Is that sustainable, I guess, is my question. Especially given, so, go ahead.
Oh, so I was just going to say the state made some early investments when Michelle Lujan Grisham first took office. And the governor did an amazing job of recognizing that early childhood education was something that she needed to start right away on.
Yeah.
So when she first took office, she not only signed into law the creation of the Early Childhood Education and Care Department, which was able to fast-track so many opportunities for the field itself, because before that it had been housed under, gosh, five or six different departments throughout the state. So this kind of streamlined that process. But she also invested wisely in what's called the Early Childhood Trust Fund. So she took $320 million in 2019 and put it into this trust fund. And today that trust fund is worth $11 billion with a B. We are doing so well as a state with these investments. And so that is part of how the department is being funded now. Through the bill that we had been mentioning earlier, we are now getting $700 million from that trust fund over a five-year period, plus the $500 million that they get in their budget annually. You know, I think that we're doing fantastically well. And we also receive 1.25% of the land grant permanent fund, which last time I looked was $37 million. So we're doing pretty great in terms of our investments. And if we keep this up, we will see a return on those investments. Because early childhood education, you know, we know that when every dollar we spend in early childhood education, we get $7 back.
Yeah.
It's a lifelong investment in these children that we're making. And I think that the governor and the department has done a great job in showing how valuable that can be for the state.
And it does require some foresighted thinking, because the children who receive early childhood education are more likely to do well in school, more likely to not have difficulties with the criminal justice system, more likely to be successful adults that will be working and paying into taxes. Is that kind of the calculation, that this is really a long-term goal?
Absolutely. You know, there's even health benefits associated
sure.
with early
yeah.
childhood education. So, yeah, we're looking at a long-term investment. And sometimes that can be really hard when you look at a newborn, thinking about the yeah. adult that they might become and what they might do to, you know, invest in the state or invest in themselves. But you know, I think that that's something that when you know even a little bit about early childhood education, you understand that long-term investment is so worthwhile.
I think any time any state is the first to do anything like this, it gains a lot of national attention. And I assume that you have been hearing from peers and colleagues in other states around the country who are curious about what we're trying to do here in New Mexico.
I have, yes. So Save the Children Action Network is a national organization. We do have individuals across several different states around the country. And so I'm in constant contact with folks in, you know, Colorado and Washington, Tennessee, Virginia. And even though it's not part of our network, I did actually just have a conversation with some folks in New York who are attempting to do their own version of universal child care.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we are becoming a leader in early childhood education, and that's something that is a fantastic opportunity for us and for the rest of the country, and it's also a great responsibility. So we want to make sure that we're touting not only what the government has done, because they have done an incredible amount, but we also want to lift up all of the advocates and community members, and
mm-hmm.
especially those providers who have been working in this field for decades and decades in trying to lift up the importance of early childhood education.
I think this is a very exciting opportunity, and we'll have to see how this kind of unfolds, because we're just at the beginning, and it's we'll have to have you back again just to keep asking about what the progress is.
Yeah, I'm super excited as well. You know, I think that this is just the beginning for the country. I think this is kind of a culmination of years and years of work on behalf of so many people who have been invested in this field for so long in New Mexico itself. And now we get to spread that word around as much as we possibly can. And hopefully that means that children around the country are going to get the care that they so desperately need.
And I would just say that there's an organization called the Annie Casey Foundation that every year puts out ranking for child well-being in all the 50 states, and every year it's either us or Mississippi coming in dead last.
Yep.
For a number of different reasons, but you know, the idea that we need to increase investment in our children seems to be fairly obvious given the results that we're dealing with
yep.
right now.
Agreed.
And then with the child care provided, then the adults should have an impact on poverty levels in the state, because then parents who can't afford to leave their children can now go out and into the workforce.
Oh, absolutely. It relieves not only the financial strain and that burden, but it also can relieve some of that emotional strain, right?
Yes.
We love our children, but, you know, raising a child alone or even with care can be a heavy lift.
Yeah.
And knowing that raising a child takes a village,
yeah.
we want to make sure that that village is well supported, well sustained, and is available for every family that might need it.
I do have a question. Is it only for parents who are working, or how about parents going back to school?
Yes, parents going back to school are also qualified, and there are exceptions for a few different folks, like grandparents who might be raising their grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there's some acceptance for children who are born drug dependent. Mm. So there's definitely a lot of leeway in there, and definitely worth looking into for any family that might be interested in seeing whether or not they qualify.
Okay.
Is there any one central clearinghouse or one website or for parents to go to get more information and to see what might be available in their neighborhoods?
Yeah, so that's all going to be housed under the Early Childhood Education and Care Department's website, the ECECD. So they have a fantastic website that allows you to see providers in your area, allows you to check just even if you're eligible without having to fill out a full application, and lots of phone numbers that you can call for different offices in your area as well.
And do you have any advice for parents what they should be looking for when they go out looking for a provider?
You know, I'd say as a parent and as a former educator myself, I think that most parents are able to trust their gut enough.
Sure.
When you look at a place, you're able to tell whether or not that is going to be someplace that you're comfortable sending your child. I'd say absolutely go in person to check the place out, meet the people that are going to be caring for your children, and then also just looking at the other children who are already in care there as well mm-hmm. to see what's going on with them. But, you know, nothing beats the network of parents that you might have in your own social network. So talking to them about places that they send their children. But there, again, because we have such an amazing system here in New Mexico, there are so many different places for parents that offer a wide range of care options as well.
Once again, we've been talking with Nina Quintana from Save the Children Action Network. We're down to our last minute or so. Is there anything that we haven't asked you about that is important people know about this?
You know, I think that just hitting home the idea that, you know, whether you need care or not for your child, it's important for them to be exposed to other children and different environments and different learning methods. And then also just the idea that when we support the workforce, we support early childhood education in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more we can do to increase the support that we're giving the workforce, the more we're supporting increasing quality and capacity around the state.